Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial. Do you want to improvise with us? You can yes and The Improverbial podcast and be a sponsor. Please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Habitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Thalbett, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah! Hey, Pete, you kind of been ignoring me this morning. I don't know if I did something. I don't know why you're giving me this cold shoulder.
I see that.
You didn't give me the cold shoulder. If you give me the warm shoulder,
I gave you
anything,
the big hug.
You did. I was just trying to slip that in there.
Oh, you sure did.
By giving you a bad name. I'm that kind of friend. All that is our proverbs. This episode is to give the cold shoulder. I know that's a proverb I have used. I don't know if any time recently, but it's something that's quite familiar out there. And the meaning is it's the act of ignoring someone, or when you have an unfriendly response, it means somebody gave me the cold shoulder. It is kind of an interesting visual, right? That you've got this cold shoulder. So it is.
I mean, it's pretty intuitive what it might mean in a way.
Well, I was wondering that. Is it intuitive, or is it because
just
this
so
is
so ingrained?
Exactly. So it seems like kind of makes sense where it might have come from. But is that just because this is so ingrained that we can associate a cold shoulder with it being somebody being unfriendly? Now, the first recorded use that I found in my research was from 1816 by Sir Walter Scott, who
I'm going to go back. I know we're going to go somewhere with this, but even before that.
Okay, go for it.
Even before that. It was a mistranslation of a Latin phrase from the book of Nehemiah.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you found this piece of it, but
yes.
Yeah. So like even, so in fact, it is interesting because it was about turning their back. The phrase was, they turned their backs on you, not their shoulders on you.
Right.
And so that's interesting too, right there from the start. It's like, and that isn't turning, if this phrase was to give someone the cold back, I guess
right.
I think it would even be really obvious.
And that
but
was,
I didn't mean to interrupt
well,
your flow
no,
there.
I think to qualify what I was talking about is the first recorded use as
correct.
is by Sir Walter Scott,
all right.
1816, but you're exactly right. It is, he was referring to something from, I had from the Vulgate Bible, which was a mistranslation to stubbornly they turn their backs on you.
Dederunt umerum recendentum.
There we have some nice Latin.
Yes.
Nice. Beautiful accent there, Pete.
Thank you. It's very accurate Latin accent, just like the Romans used to use.
I always noticed your Latin accent. Now, Sir Walter Scott, just to say, he wrote Ivanhoe, he wrote Rob Roy as well. And he had this in his work called The Antiquary, his work. And it's in the Scots language. Now, my very first stumbling on the etymology of this was actually, and this is what actually turned me onto this, was that the etymology is a custom of serving a cold shoulder of mutton to an unwanted guest, right? So if you were
is
over
that
my
why
house,
you always give me
yeah. When
mutton
you come
shoulder,
over, I say, hey, do you want to have this deli meat of mutton shoulder? And it really means you need to get out of my house,
Pete. I was wondering why you keep on serving me mutton at your house.
Yeah, no. And so if you didn't want somebody there, supposedly that's what you would do. But this etymology is false.
Wrong.
It's wrong. It's not a true fact. And it's not a true etymology. So Pete and all of you listeners out there, I want you to stop spreading this etymology.
Lies.
Lies, all lies. Pete, did you find something else with this whole origin that we need to bring up before we move on to some of our other
Not necessarily, research? Although I just want to note that Sir Walter Scott also coined the phrase lock, stock, and barrel.
Did he really? Very much. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Lock, stock, and barrel.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, we dig on for another episode.
A little tidbit is that it seems to have hit the United States by 1839. There was a letter to the editor of a newspaper, I believe in Maine, the Bangor Daily Whig and Courier, in which it said, "Eminent individuals and his cabinet advisors turned the cold shoulder to their ambassador for his independent act upon this occasion." So it's been in the United States for a good long time as well.
Yeah. Now, as I was looking at this, and as I said, like when I first did my initial research, this etymology about serving a cold shoulder of mutton to an unwanted guest really intrigued me. And then I was disappointed to learn that's not the etymology. It's something, you know, more ancient, but not
almost
as like graphic.
More literal, you know, like, or
yeah,
like
a little more literal. They do suspect that the origin is actually a very little action of turning one's back on a person, you know, that you're trying to avoid. So I started looking at like false etymologies, things that are there.
Yeah.
That are actually not true. Most of these I didn't even know, but they're kind of fun that they were out there. Mm-hmm. This one, I had heard this idea that the word crap came from the British plumber Thomas Crapper. Right. Have you heard that?
I have heard that expression.
Right. And I was like, I like that, that the toilet was invented by Thomas Crapper.
Yeah.
And it's called the Crapper.
Yeah.
But actually, crap does not come necessarily from Thomas Crapper. Poor guy. So Crapper is actually, that name is actually derives from the word cropper. So somebody who harvests crops would be called a cropper.
Okay.
And that somehow morphed into a crapper. So if you're a crapper, then you were somebody who harvests.
And not somebody who takes a lot of shits.
Exactly. And then crap comes from the medieval Latin of crapa, which means chaff. And chaff is a term for harvest. It's what's left over. It's the chaff from the wheat. And that's where that comes from.
Well, how does that end up being meaning, you know, poop?
I don't know. I don't know. But they say that.
Please write in.
Please write in if you know, but that it's not necessarily with poop.
Oh, man.
I know. I know what it means. So like this, I know where it comes from. The chaff from the wheat is like the poop. You don't use it. It's the waste product. It's the byproduct. And it's the crap of the wheat.
Yeah, but how do you separate the wheat from the crap? Yeah. Or the chaff, I think they say.
You got to stop pooping in wheat fields, Pete.
Yeah, that's the conclusion. I thought you were going to say, because all the croppers would crap in the fields or something. I don't know.
Now, I have another one I thought was interesting. I like it. So the F word.
Oh, yeah.
Some say the etymology of the F word stands for
Wait, which word?
The F word, Pete.
Friendly
or fart.
Okay, we all know the F word.
They think it's from for unlawful carnal knowledge.
Okay.
For unlawful.
I've heard
carnal,
that. I always rejected that as a stretch.
Well, you were right in that. Yeah. Or also fornication under consent of king.
No. Fornication.
We use that all the time.
I know. I usually, when I shorten it though, usually.
You say the, yes. Yeah. Fornification under consent of king.
Fornication, not fornification.
Fornification. I wrote it exactly as I had read it. Now, so then let's look at what they do think the F word origin. The earliest record of it is circa 1475 from the poem Flen Flies. Flen spelled F-L-E-N, flies spelled F-L-Y-Y-S.
Yeah.
And that is within that poem, the word fucant is in there. And literally from the Latin is they F. I'm trying to keep this not an explicit rating. That's why I'm not saying it yet.
Swear words in this already? I did already say shit.
You did? All right.
I did it again.
Fucant means they fuck. And so the this is from proto-Germanic roots is where fuck comes from.
But so they, but where did they get that from? That's what I want to know.
To fucant? It's
Latin. Does it have anything? There's a word fecund, meaning fertile. F-E-C-U-N-D.
F-E-C?
Okay. U-N-D. I don't know. It sounds like I'm going to make up a new false etymology right now.
Let's do it.
If something is fecund, it's fertile or productive, right? So I don't know. I mean,
it could be.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
False etymologies.
There we go.
That's what we're all about because we make up false
all
stuff
the time.
All the time.
Where did your mind go with this?
I was wondering if shoulders are cold for real. And apparently, you know, everyone knows 45% of your heat is lost through your head or whatever. Mm-hmm. Also false. Wrong.
Wrong.
That's just wrong.
It's wrong again.
It's wrong.
I know where the 45% of the heat comes out of your loins. Is that where the heat gets lost? Comes out
of
your,
yeah, all my heat comes out of my loins too.
Out of Pete's loins.
Thanks for saying loins. Apparently, Indiana University researchers Rachel Vreeman and Aaron Carroll said if that were true, then humans would be. Oh, if that were true, then humans would be just as cold if they went without a hat as if they went without trousers. Now, if you're asking me, I'm in a snowstorm. Do I get a hat or do I get trousers? I'm taking the trousers because I lose all my heat through my loins.
You do.
Here's what happened. There was a military experiment where they detected how people lost their heat.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And they were fully clothed except for their hats. So they lost most of their heat out of their head. Duh. Right.
Cause if
the experiment had been done and they were in the nude or wearing a Speedo, their heat loss would have through their head would have been like 10%. So apparently it's more like, it's about square footage of exposure more than it is about the location. However, so I don't think shoulders are particularly cold, but faces and head and your head and like your armpits and your crotch are particularly sensitive to changes in heat and temperature. So that's why we feel warmer when those areas are warm.
Or exposed fact, or they're necessary. If they're warm or if they're.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the cold shoulder is like the opposite of openness. So where I went, I was interested in this thought.
Can I just say one thing? Because it's just bringing to mind, yeah. Like if my hands are cold, I'm putting them in my armpits or I'm putting them like right here.
Right down your loins.
not necessarily right on my loins, but you know, between my legs. My legs are crossed.
Depends how cold you are.
Yeah. I'm never thinking of putting it on top of my head.
Nope.
No, you never think of that.
You got
Pete.
All that hair up there.
You've just blew my mind, Booyah. Which makes my head so hot when you blow my mind.
Yeah.
All right. So please go on to your next thought, Pete.
No, this is great. I was, giving someone the cold shoulder is the opposite of being open. And so I was thinking about what about openness? What's good about openness? You know, evidently, according to Scientific American, openness to new experiences is positively associated with a lot of things, among them creativity, enjoyment of imagination and cognitive stimulation, curiosity, IQ, personal growth, breadth and depth of emotional experience, appreciation of beauty, awe, I can go on and on, authenticity, finding flow. So
when you say being open, like open to new ideas, new experiences, mm-hmm. that kind of like this growth mindset, that mm-hmm. seems to be the term out there right now is having a growth mindset. Like mm-hmm. I'm not static in who I am or what I can be or mm-hmm. what I can experience.
Mm-hmm. Abundance.
Abundance. Yeah.
Openness to new things. I mean, that's so much a joy in my life comes from the realization that like adventure is out there. Change isn't. Have to be scary, you know, mm-hmm. and so much of doing fun, cool, interesting, exciting things in your life is just a matter of being open to the possibility that you can.
Yeah.
Because you can.
You can. You know? Now, do you find, are there things, because I know for myself, there are that I like, no, I'm not going to like that. Like, and that it's correct and right that we should say, I'm not going to like that.
But have you ever thought you were going to like a thing and then surprised yourself?
I'm sure exactly. The answer of that is yes.
That was rhetorical.
Yeah. The answer is yes. And I can't think of it right offhand.
I don't necessarily mean you should suddenly take up a career in, I don't know, sword swallowing or accounting if it doesn't strike your fancy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's more like just, I don't know, this concept, it's something I try to teach, tell my children because it's a thing that you have to keep relearning and reminding yourself of is that, you know, adventure awaits and change can be fun and whatever you're doing now isn't necessarily what you have to always do.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of changes, you know, and not always, they haven't always been perfect and great, but I wouldn't trade them in. It's like what gives life texture.
I know. I mean, look at us in our 90s picking up a podcast. You know what I mean?
Wait, this part's supposed to be true.
Why do I keep doing that? I can't help but tell falsehoods. Yeah.
I'm only 20.
Five. I know. We're just 25. Putting our ages together, we are.
Yeah, we are like, Lisa and I are like exactly the same age almost.
We are.
She's a, well.
Well, you know, there's 3 days difference and we'll leave it up to you guys to know who's older.
But who's wiser.
It's obvious who's more youthful in this relationship.
Who's wisest in this podcast. All right. And now we turn to the second part of our podcast. And just as a gentle reminder to you, dear listeners, this is a bunch of bullcrap. We're about to make up a whole heap load of lies and fabrications about a phrase that we are going to invent on the spot from words we learn from each other on the spot. And it's going to have a history and an etymology and a great story behind it. So fasten your seatbelts. As I turn to the Proverbitron, generously provided by our generous sponsors at the generous Boardman Review. This time they've really dolled it up. It's got racing stripes on it. It's this new cherry red paint job. Looks like a 59 Corvette.
It does. It's all aerodynamic and everything. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. The performance it has in a wind tunnel is amazing.
You should hear the throaty roar of its engine. You won't really be able to hear because this is just the word spitting out mode. But here it goes. Ready?
Butterscotch.
And the first word is butterscotch. Butterscotch.
And the second word is
phlegm.
Phlegm. Phlegm. Oh, Pete, these are great words, and it brings up a great proverb. This one is, well, phlegm me like a butterscotch rocket. And that's usually how it's said, right? Well, phlegm me like a butterscotch rocket, right? Can you believe? Yeah. Woo. Yeah. It's usually done with a shrug of a shoulders, isn't it?
Yep.
Absolutely. Shrug of a shoulders and a little bit of a shuffle of the foot, right?
It's even hard to, And like the way you scrape your foot on the floor is part of the, it's hard to see it, but it's like your foot is like your kicking a side of the foot shot in soccer, but like in a slow motion, scraping along the floor.
Yeah.
And it's like you shrug your shoulders and do that little motion. Well, phlegm me like a butterscotch rocket.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does come out of the sporting world, I think.
Well, I think absolutely. Cause that movement does give some idea of the football field, the European style football field.
Yeah. There's football there. I mean, the cool thing about this, it has multiple sporting overtones. You got your football thing and you got your horse racing thing in there too. Right?
Yeah, you do. The horses are also involved. Yeah.
We'll get into that famous horse racing episode that.
Yes. Yeah.
Comes from.
So I think one of the key elements here is the rocket, right? Mm-hmm. And it brings
that's
us.
That's the rocket, the butterscotch rocket.
Yeah. That brings us, it brings us to two fields. It brings us to the soccer field in Scotland, where you had the nickname of that famous guy. He was Scooter Malone. Scooter Malone was known as the butterscotch rocket out there on the football field.
Right. Because of his, he had that ginger hair.
Yeah. The ginger hair. And he was quite popular. He was a fan favorite. And then of course, after his renown and fame, then you had the racehorse that we all now know and kind of mourn, of course, because it was such a tragedy how that happened.
Yeah. Heap of bones.
Heap of bones.
Heap of bones.
Yeah.
What a fast horse, a slow sounding name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, that heap of bones had so much heart.
Yeah. And Scooter, of course, made his millions with his fame out there in the European League of Soccer and was a big horse fan, right? Horse racing fan.
Yeah. Scooter was known for the precision of his shooting forward and he had so much
and
heart.
And backward.
Yeah.
His precision backward was...
Forward, but one of the things his trademark was this backward move that he would do where he'd spin around when the defender came at him and just come out of the backward. They couldn't see the ball. He'd really give him the cold shoulder and then just like,
and then scoot right around him and then shoot. Like most of his goals, he would hit him backwards.
Yeah.
Right?
With the side of his foot, was a trademark shot for him. Well,
we could just hook around, go backwards and, they think, oh, he's heading this way. And there the ball would go right behind everybody. Yeah. That butterscotch rocket, you never knew what was coming from him.
And so, because of his success, he became very wealthy
Yeah.
This was not in the days of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi when we're talking about hundreds of millions.
No.
But back in what it was like the 50s,
yes,
when Scooter hit his peak, he got paid by their terms a whole lot of money.
He could buy a round at the pub. You know what I mean? He could buy the pub, didn't flaunt it, but yeah.
Well, except for he loved horse racing so much and Heap of Bones was a horse that he fell in love with. Heap of Bones, fittingly enough, also ginger colored, same color.
That's why he fell in love. It was like love and first sight. I mean, just a little bit of, what's it called? Disclosure.
Full disclosure.
Uh-huh. I am a redhead. I am a ginger.
Yeah, that's why I call you Scooter sometimes.
You call me Scooter Malone every once in a while. And you're like, you know, I'm not like a big sports person.
You know, I never call you Heap of Bones.
I would never call you Heap of Bones. So I understand that affection towards anybody with ginger hair. We always kind of give each other a little wink. So Scooter Malone and I think saw Heap of Bones there in the manger and was like, that's my kind. Yeah. That's my kind of horse.
Canterbury Downs. When Scooter first encountered Heap of Bones at Canterbury Downs race course.
Yeah.
It was basically love at first sight. It didn't hurt that Heap of Bones was the top rated racehorse in the English horse racing at the time.
Yeah.
And had just won the Canterbury Downs.
Yeah.
You know, and also, by the way, won Scooter Malone a heap of money.
They did. It really exponentially brought his net worth up, not just from the soccer.
And so what did he do with the winnings? He bought that horse. It's kind of cool. The horse won in the money. He turns around and buys a horse.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And you know, we say love at first sight. It was mutual. This horse would follow around Scooter. When Scooter was playing on the field, that you couldn't have any TV or radio or anything tuned to that game because Heap of Bones would be like really up on its hindquarters, like really wanting to be near Scooter, excited.
What do they do? Because obviously they needed to put those games, broadcast those games. So they brought Heap of Bones. So there was like a little paddock next to the pitch.
Yeah. It was like his lucky horseshoe was right there.
Yeah. All
on
four
the pitch.
Horseshoes.
All four.
Yeah, like
right there.
A little paddock right off the side there. So Heap of Bones could watch it. It was amazing. Heap of Bones would track Scooter up and down the pitch.
But the horse would just follow.
It's just a love affair. It's a beautiful story.
It was a love, which makes it extra sad for.
It's really sad. You know, when Heap of Bones started, declining.
The decline because horses don't generally live as long as people. So that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, we have, unfortunately,
you know, and there's that final race that happened to Edinburgh, at the Edinburgh Turf Club.
He wasn't
right. 1957 famously, in September 9th, I think it was, or early September
9th. 1957
Edinburgh Turf Club when, it was the big race. Heap of Bones was the favorite.
Yeah.
Scooter Malone.
In the stand, all the fortune there.
He put all the chips on Heap of Bones at that race.
He's betting on his own horse. And it was allowed back then.
Oh, right. Of course. Of course he was.
Yeah. Yes. It was common back then. And so there they are all like, you got Heap of Bones there, you know, ready to go, saddled up. The favorite jockey, Skipper Magoo on the back.
Yeah. Another Scottish jockey. And you know, the thing is, in the books that I've read about the subject later days, they talk about how Skipper was on the horse and had said, Heap of Bones, she's not breathing properly. There's something going on here.
And Scooter's so in love with this animal can do anything. And when I don't feel well, I still go out on the pitch.
And
Heap of Bones is fine.
And he
fine.
Just, you know, so they opted to go ahead and race.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows what happened after that.
Yeah. I mean, but for those maybe that non-Western lore. Yeah. Yeah. So there they go. The gates open. There we go.
Yep. Off they go.
Yep.
Racing.
Heap of Bones.
Neck and neck.
Quick start as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the first cough hit. Yeah.
A little bit of cough. It's just sad to watch, really, because by the end of the race, the whole Heap of Bones is obviously ailing.
Yeah.
Skipper McGee is using
the crop to all the tricks that Skipper used, and Heap of Bones is really lagging there. at the end. So then, but, yeah. but finishes.
Finishes, of course. And of course, who's waiting right there at the finish, right there in the circle.
Scooter
is there, very concerned indeed. And by now, you know, Heap of Bones.
So Heap of Bones and Scooter, they see each other, they embrace. So of course the embrace is the horse bringing its head so down close to Scooter's shoulder.
And there's a warm embrace and you know, Scooter is crying, prodigiously, because first of all, he's lost his entire fortune. Second of all, his beloved horse is clearly ailing, and the horse has a mighty coughing fit right then at that time.
And that's when the kind of the cough of the ages happens right there on his shoulder.
Right on camera, black and white.
There's the big phlegm. Projects with such force.
It's like a flood.
Yeah. And Scooter Malone drowns in the phlegm of Heap of Bones.
Yeah. So it's such a sad story.
I mean, a lot of people have seen the footage.
And Heap of Bones collapses at the same time.
They collapse together. The phlegm comes out. Scooter Malone at first putting up a fight because no one can get.
It's all sticky and deep. And Heap of Bones collapses right on.
The autopsy, I did read the official report. It was drowning. First, and then it was crushing impact from the horse.
So now, of course, what we say, flem me like a butterscotch rocket is like destroy my life all at once. 100%.
Exactly. Flem me like a butterscotch rocket. And then a little kick of the foot in honor of butterscotch, a little tilt of the head in honor of Heap of Bones' final embrace.
Yep.